Okay, at this time, to share her experience, strength, and hope on the topic pain is inevitable, we have Antoinette B. from Brooklyn. Yeah.
I'm an addict, recovering from the dis-ease of addiction. My name is Antoinette B. I can't thank God enough. I can't thank God enough for His grace, His mercy, His unmerited favor. Unmerited favor is favor that I did nothing to deserve. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I want to give a shout out to my girl Ebony and Deidre. Yesterday I celebrated my birthday, my 59th birthday. I need to tell you, hell has an exit. Pain is inevitable and suffering is optional. Anytime I'm at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting or anywhere in the realms of recovery, I could kiss these floors. Because I'm so grateful. I was always holding my head down. Always holding my head down. Couldn't look nobody in the eyes. I need to tell you that God scraped me up. God scraped me up. He chiseled me up. A disease-infested addict like me, and gave me grace and mercy. This is my 30th year living with full-blown AIDS. It's also my 8th year in remission from severe stomach cancer. I'm so grateful. So grateful. It was a long journey home. I'm a product of incest. My mother and father, blood brother and sister, they were pedophiles. They sexually molested children. They sold them, they kidnapped them, they raped them, they was in children pornography. I remember the horror, I remember the pain, but the same thing was happening to me. Mirror, mirror, on the wall, that mirror, it isn't there at all. The pain inside the mirror that I seen, my God, the pain was not in the mirror, the pain was inside me. Like I said, I'm a product of incest. My mother and father gave me my first drug, which was alcohol. Alcohol is a drug. She sold me to men at 4 years old. I remember her holding me over the toilet and letting men penetrate me at a very young age and every hole I had. I remember being locked between my mother's legs, and I better do it right. If I tell you the truth about me, will you still love me?
Yes.
I can't hear you.
Yes.
I'm gonna tell you the truth anyway, because see, that's how it works. Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, humility, and acceptance in the first step. We gotta get honest. I'm not talking about that surface honesty. I'm talking about that honesty where you go deep down in your spirit and you pull out all that toxic stuff that caused you to go out and hurt yourself. Time and time and time again, I'm talking about unaddressed issues. Unaddressed issues will address themselves. I'm speaking for the little boy, the little girl who's been sexually molested, They need to talk about that stuff. They had dogs humping on me. Dogs. Animals. And this was for the effects of the pictures, because I know your people and all kinds of numbers go talk about after that beast that she had sex with animals. No, that's not what I'm saying. They were humping on me for the effect of the pictures. They was into children pornography. Something happens to the spirit, the ism, the internal spiritual mechanism inside. When you've been molested as a child, something happens. A part of you dies. It's toxified. You got to be careful of the spirits you plant, even in recovery, even in today. Because those spirits, those words you plant, they take root in the spirit. Words like you're ugly, you're stupid, you ain't never gonna be nothing. Oh, internet, your nose too big, your hair too short, you unworthy. These are words that got into my spirit, and I believe those words. I believe I was ugly, I was stupid, I was never gonna be nothing, couldn't hold my head up. All I wanted to do was please my mother and my father. Because even though I was abused as a child, doesn't mean I didn't love my family. I did love my mother and my father regardless. I didn't know no other way. I was conditioned to use. I was conditioned to use at an early age. I truly believe I'm the product of all the seeds that was planted into my spirit. I didn't know then that I had a dis-ease that had a character, a personality, and a nature. Cunning, baffling, and insidious. Sly, expert. Master in the art of manipulation. Clever, sneaky, sabotaging, wicked. Baffling, to cause a state of confusion, to trick, to puzzle, insidious, to lay in wait, already well established before becoming a parent. I need to say that my mother and father eventually, they got caught up with, they went to jail. When they came out of jail, they got ran out the South, because I'm originally from Darlington, South Carolina. However, I was raised in Brooklyn and in Manhattan. And I know God didn't bring me this far to say psych. He did not bring internet B's ass all the way to Connecticut to say psych. Or bring me this far in recovery. Let me tell you, some people don't know about the awesome power of the God we serve in Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. You better ask somebody. They were ran out the South. And we came to New York. And just because I'm in recovery does not mean the reality of my life has changed. It's just that I have developed coping skills to manage my reality, identify my reality, cope with my reality. I don't run from my reality today. I do not. It is what it is. I have the first step on a deeper level, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, humility, and acceptance of who I am. And I say that to say, is because I have 11 children out here that I had an active addiction, and I cannot tell you who the father of none of those children are. Not one. Two born with AIDS. Two of them that didn't ask for this. Also family members, I'm the oldest of 14 siblings that walk past me every day and don't speak to me because I live with AIDS. But guess what? God gave me a brand new family. How about that? Woo! He gave me a brand new family who accept me for who I am.
Right. Right.
So when we came to New York, I had to live in the tunnels. In Manhattan, they called us mole people. And those bums raised me up in those tunnels in Manhattan. And I'm grateful to those bums. You know why? Because they taught me coping skills, survival skills that I needed for back then. They taught me where to go to get free food, free clothes. And yes, they raped me. Yeah, they did. They sold me. They passed me around. But the same thing was happening at home. The same thing was happening at home. And those same bums could have loved me, though, and protect me. They did. And I know the disease of addiction is my dysfunctional thinking, behaviors, and attitudes, but I better remember the grips. If I take the first one, I cannot stop. I can't stop sticking needles in my neck, in my feet, between my legs, anywhere I can get a vein, having a big hand, a big foot. And when I start smoking crack, I thought I had graduated. No, for real, I thought I was doing better because I was such a nasty intravenous user. So when I started smoking crack, I didn't want to stick needles in my hands and my neck no more. So I thought I was doing better. But I didn't know I was going to be locked and bound to a drug. I didn't know. Like I said, I better remember that once I take the first one, I can't stop. Because I remember being disease infested, walking around full-blown AIDS, not knowing I had AIDS, herpes, hepatitis C, venereal warts, all of that. It had to do what I had to do to get the next one. Out here spreading AIDS. That's right, spreading AIDS. Spreading herpes. Spreading hepatitis C. Spreading all my nasty diseases. I'm so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous because the spirituality and recovery practice had nothing to do with religion. But I knew there was a God. I knew there was a God. I was not raised in the church, but I knew there was a power greater than myself that would help me. But I really thought at that time that I was going to die a crackhead. I couldn't see the forest for the trees. I was locked in my addiction. I had to use. By any means necessary, I had to get the next one. My topic is pain is inevitable and suffering is optional. I didn't know I had a choice. But I need to tell you, if you've lost your disease of addiction, the hell has an exit. It has an exit. And I was out there using. And back then, the crack was only $2 a bottle. They even had dollar holes in Manhattan where you stick the stem through the hole and you take a pole and you better take one pole and hurry your ass off that stem because somebody would come from behind that door with a hammer and hammer your ass up. And my alter ego's name is Mama Hammer Slammer Jammer. And I earned that name. I was Mama Hammer Slammer Jammer. And I didn't walk. I hopped. And I don't have that story where I can say where I went in people's house and used because people would see me hopping down the block, they would cross the street. Or if I tried to hop up in their house to use, they say, I don't know where you're hopping to, but you ain't hopping nothing there. But I don't have that identification going somebody's house to use and them putting me out because I never first got in. But I remember being locked in the grips of my addiction and one of my babies coming out of me and the blood pushing down my leg and I'm holding my legs together because I can't put the stem down. Somebody had to knock it out of my hand and get me to the hospital. I could not put that stem down, getting hit by a Jeep. And the Jeep bouncing me up in the air. And I landed up under the Jeep. So the man jumped out the car because he knows I'm a crackhead. And he reached under the Jeep with a fistful of dollars. And I hop up under that Jeep. And I snatch that money. And I go straight to the crack spot. Straight to the crack spot. yourself out of your mama. Don't tell nobody you're my mother. Being locked and loaded in the disease of addiction. Hell has an exit. It was a long journey home. A long, long journey home. And I couldn't stop. I wanted to stop. I didn't know I had a choice. I had to go to God. I had to go to God because I thought I was going to die crackhead. Die locked and loaded in the disease of addiction. Of my addiction, disease infested. God loves sick and broken people. Yes, he do. God loves fixing broken people, baby.
That's right. That's right.
And I went to that God. And I said, God, please help me. Because I didn't want to use no more. And let me tell you, when he helped me, it was a process. No lightning didn't come out the sky and I stopped using. It was a series of mental institutions, detoxes, rehabs. I was broken. When I came to recovery, I was 50 years old. I was old. When I woke up, I was old. I was still tweaking. I was still hopping. That's why it's not good to judge people in the ruins of Narcotics Anonymous, because you don't know what rock they came under. And our basic text talk about you're going to meet all levels and measures of the recovering addict. All levels and measures of the recovering addict. Your story don't have to be my story, but the pain is the same. The pain is the same. I wanted to get clean. I didn't know nothing about Narcotics Anonymous. I was disease infested in more ways than one. And like I said, it was mental institutions, detoxes, rehabs, and somehow I ended up in them. I believe God brought me into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because when they brought me in, two women were holding me up because I was trembling so bad, and I was still tweaking, and I was still hopping because I couldn't sit down, and I was hopping back and forth to the coffee pot, and you know what y'all said? I thought I was cute. I thought I was cute. With a lopsided weave on, plastic shoes, and I'm hopping. My sponsor said, God damn it, if she wanna hop, let her hop. At least she ain't hopping to get a goddamn hit. So I continued to hop, but let me tell you, I came, man. And I was still fine, but I came, man. And I wanted this, but I was still needy. I was still codependent. I had a lot of unmet needs.
Come on, girl.
I thought it was okay for a man to beat me or a woman to beat me. It was like, do whatever you want to me, just don't leave me. Do whatever you want to me, but don't leave me. And I always was attracted to somebody who looked like some kind of celebrity. You know, we attract who we are. And I came in with a muscle-bound midget, look like Mr. T. And that was the love of my life. And I couldn't keep the focus on the million, because I'm too busy watching my waterhead midget, because I'm thinking, what do you want him? I thought, what do you want in him? Then I met James Brown in the room. I married him. I married him. This is a true story. Then I met Rick James in the room. And I married him too. Then I met the love of my life, Dennis Rodman, in the room. I sat my head on a blonde toupee. And let me tell you, first, I was the newcomer. These men had 10 years, 12 years, 14 years. Everything that looked good to you is not good for you. Listen to people's stories. Because I came in the rooms, I wasn't honest yet. I hadn't told nobody I had AIDS. I didn't tell them I had A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, O, N, O, P. No, I'm serious. Everything looks good to you. Listen to people's stories. Get a new coming time to recover. And I'm marrying these men with no days clean. Then I would go out. Not telling them I had AIDS, I was full blown. Then I would go out. The same day I got married and sold my wedding band and be back on the corner spreading AIDS again. Spreading herpes again. Spreading venereal what again? Pain and suffering. Unaddressed issues. Unmet needs. Toxification in the spirit. Dying. Dying in the rules of Narcotics Anonymous, but I wanted this. You can't measure somebody else's desire to stay clean.
That's right.
The only requirement for membership is a desire to stay clean and stop using. I wanted this. I wanted this. I wanted it. Coming in and out the rooms. Because I would like to say I stayed. I did not stay. I kept going in and out. I wasn't addressing my issues. It wasn't until I started incorporating the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous into my life and start applying those principles. Because see, we could write these steps. We could talk about we know these steps and get up here and give all this, you know, page 38 and the basic tech and all of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? But we gotta live it and we gotta apply it into our lives. It has to get in there. I really wanted it. And I had to get a sponsor who was willing to sponsor me and guide me through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, because it don't make no sense to be in a 12-step program and not applying the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. Honesty in the first, hope in the second, faith in the third, courage in the fourth, trust in the fifth, willingness in the sixth, humility in the seventh, forgiveness in the eighth, restitution in the ninth, perseverance in the tenth, spirituality in the 11th, and the most important one is service. We must give back what was so freely given to us. Because we have members in Narcotics Anonymous who are dying. When I started getting involved with service, it made me get the focus off of myself. Every time I went back out, it got worse for me. Even for me. And the last time I used, something was eating me. And that's the best way I could describe it. Something was eating me, and it felt like a rat was in my stomach fighting huge hunks of my meat. And I still couldn't put the stem down. That's how powerful crack is. You pick that shit up, I don't care what's going on with your body, you're still gonna smoke. Yeah. But when that shit out come out, your pussy hurting, your ass hurting, you all fucked up, you got diabetes, you got hepatitis C, you all broke and shit. You know you all messed up when that stuff come out, but while you smoking, you know, you said nothing bothering, you know, jumping over, you know, buildings and all that kind of stuff. Now I had neuropathy in my legs. And when you got neuropathy, you're not supposed to be able to walk. So like I said, I was full blown. But I'm jumping over buildings. As soon as I take a hit, my pussy was working. But when the crack came out, the shit stopped working. You know, time seems to stop. You think you're still young. Yeah. My pussy had white hair on it. I'm like, what the fuck is this? White hair on the shit. Got to squeeze it out. You know, I'm like, what the hell going on here? Now I'm talking to you, I'm telling you, look at yourself. When the drugs come out, you all fucked up. I was old and shit. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, the crap, right? Yeah, this is true. You gotta get real up in here. I'm talking about you never heard it before. You listen to that shit in the crap house. You know what I'm saying? Oh no, internet be talking all that stuff. Oh, my ears, I can't take it. Take the stick out your ass. No, you gotta be real about recovery. That's how we heal and grow. And address issues will address themselves. And like I said, I was needy. I got married to Dennis. And Dennis, if I tell you the truth about me, will you still love me?
Yeah.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the truth anyway, because that's how it works. No, for real. I got married to Dennis, and Dennis was bisexual, so was I. But Dennis was into bestiality. He liked the animals. You want to hear the truth?
Yep. Yeah.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell the truth anyway. So he had, I wanted to stay clean. I went in the hospital, right? And they were telling me I was going to die. I said, I'm not going to die. I'm going home to Dennis because he was in love with my life. They said, Anthony, you got to go in hospital. I said, I'm not going to hospital. I'm going home to Dennis. And I went home to Dennis, but Dennis was still using. And you know, like when you need a codependent, now I'm on. I had 24-hour visit nurses. You know, I couldn't move my body. I'm on life-sustaining equipment. I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. And Dennis running in and out, you know, stealing everything that was nailed down. I lived in an abandoned building, but I had light, gas, cable, telephone, all of that. Because you know how it's recovered addicts are. I didn't go paying rent to my fifth year of recovery. I ain't paying no rent. Anyway, I wanted to stay clean. So I called the 800 number and I said, my name is Internet B. Please help me. They said, Internet, we got a homebound committee. I was like, what the hell is a homebound committee? They said, we come out to the house and we bring you in. I said, please, because I need help. Please come. At least 4 or 5 times a week. And this homebound committee came out from the Bronx and brought me a meeting. And Narcotics Anonymous is so awesome that Dennis would be running in and out, taking pictures off the wall, walking out with the goddamn TV, jumping down the steps, and they would say, oh, what's up with him? And I said, stay out my relationship. I talk about do whatever you want to me, just don't leave me, because he would be in the room having sex with men, women, the fucking chicken. The chicken going buck, 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 and ooh, and all that stuff. You know, and then, you know, now Carson and I became this bring me homebound, and out come the goddamn chicken. You know? And let me tell you something. They was like, Intel, what's up with that chicken? I said, mind your business, down my relationship. But let me tell you about me. I was jealous of the goddamn chicken. I'm rolling my eyes at the chicken. I said, this chicken said he cute. The chicken get more sex than me. I'm serious. I'm jealous of the goddamn chicken. This is how this ease of addiction. And even though I'm like, you know, I can't move. I'm all fucked up. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm in there downloading porn. Pouring up the internet of donkeys and pigs and horses, and I'm asking in there, you want to see my movies? They were like, internet, that's nasty. I mean, why, you don't want to see the horses? They were like, hell no, we don't want to see the horses. But see, you don't know something's wrong till somebody tell you. You understand? You don't talk about people, you just tell them, look, that ain't right. Then in my own time, I deleted all that porn and all that filth off my internet. But anyway, one day Dennis came to me and he sat on the edge of the bed and he said, I don't want you no more. I don't love you no more. You ugly. You got a big nose. He said, don't lay there and start crying because your big nose going to blow up. You ain't going to be able to see the movie. And you got AIDS. You got herpes. Now, my tell you, he got everything I got. Everything I fucking got, Dennis got. So he don't want me no more. You know? And it hurt. Those words got in my spirit. And I was so hurt. I said, you know, Monty being honest with me. I said, but you didn't have to say it like that. You know? And pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional because, you know, I could have went out and used, but I didn't. You know, I had a program. I had Narcotics Anonymous bringing me a meeting 4 times a week, guide me through the steps, the spiritual principles of this program. I don't have to use no matter what.
That's right.
No matter what. He's a go. You're for real.
Right. That's right.
No matter what, I don't have to use. And so he said, well, can I finish? I said, look, I want you out of my house. You know, I said, because you hit me at the time, my lowest point in my life. And he said, well, can I finish watching the James Candy movie? I said, no, you go before that goes, you just leave. And it hurt me and everything, but I got through it. I got through it. But before, how much time ago? Okay. I'll tell you that story at another time. You'll keep coming, you'll hear the rest of my story. But no matter what we go through in Narcotics Anonymous, we don't have to use. I make meetings, have a sponsor, a support group. I talk about how I feel. I don't give a damn what the next crackhead think about what I got to share.
That's right. That's right.
I got to raise my hand and talk about how I feel on a deeper level. And get gut. I spit up all that toxic stuff within my spirit. I don't have to use no matter what. No matter what. You hear me, newcomer? No matter what. And if you knew, what you doing sitting in the back? You should be sitting in the front, looking directly in the speaker's mouth. So you can get what you need. So no matter what's going on in the meeting, somebody can be talking on the side, head popping, flip flopping, bashing. No matter what's going on, you get what you need. Because you're sitting in the front. That's what the old timers used to tell us. Count your blessings instead of your problems. Mm. Count your blessings instead of your problems. If God brought you to it, he will bring you through it. Hell has an exit. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. We don't have to suffer no more in Narcotics Anonymous. This smile on my face is real. This is real. I have joy in my spirit, and joy is different from happiness. Happiness comes as a result of an event. This is real. God didn't give me richness and wealth in the way of money and material things. He gave me wealth in the spirit, but I would like some money. I'm like, God, could I please have some money? I ain't never had no money, but I'm clean. This is my 30th year living with full-blown AIDS. I'm 59 years old. I'm grateful. I'm in Rutgers Christ Convention. Yeah. Yes. God is good. If God brought you to it, he'll bring you through it. Count your blessings instead of your problems. And all through life, let this be your goal. Watch the donut and not the hole. And stop telling God how great your problem is. And tell your problems how great your God is. My name is Anthony F. B. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, I did not want to stop that, but here we have to go on. Atmosphere, please. Okay, from Westchester, we have Mark G.
My name is Mark, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. Powerful message. It's amazing, you know, it always amazed me how we sort of take off from different places and land here. You know? I didn't have that trauma. I didn't have the abusive family. But for me, you know, the topic is short-term pleasure, long-term pain. And yes, I am a grateful recovering crackhead. And I remember, you know, in my family, I'm the youngest of five, so, you know, I got two older sisters that were dope addicts. You know, a stepbrother who was a drunk. My other stepsister was a pothead. And the only thing I learned how to do was how to be a better liar, cheat, and a thief. Because I watched how they got busted, and I made sure I didn't do the same things. So to sit at dinner in my house, and somebody nodding out into a plate of food was perfectly normal, you know? But when it came to me, they couldn't figure out what the hell was wrong, you know? And I gotta tell you, in the beginning, it was a lot of fun. Somewhere down the road, it became a little fun. And in the end, it was no fun at all. And I remember that day that I picked up for the first time. I go over to my friend's house, I want to pick up a little cocaine, and they're crawling around the carpet looking for kibbles and bits. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You know? And he's like, Mark, if you try this, you will never stop. Now you tell an addict to do something, and you know we're going to do the direct opposite. So I said, let me try. I took that first hit, and I spent the next 15 years, every single day, with a $1,000 a day habit. See, my story is a little different because I inherited a lot of money at one point in my life. About $2.5 million. Give a crackhead $2.5 million, and I can tell you the run does not stop. Until there was no money. And I still didn't stop because then I was going to steal from you and you. And I had no problem stealing from my parents, going into their pocketbook, their wallet. Oh, I don't know what happened to it. You must have left it somewhere. You know, I hope you look for it. Why is there things missing from the house? You know, but you know, and there were trips to jails, there were the institutions, and for me there was several near-death experiences. I remember, you know, she talked about getting hit by the Jeep before, and I was like, shit, I was probably driving it, you know. I got news for you. I've totaled 14 cars. You know, everyone, I've fallen asleep at the wheel. And you got to picture this, you know. See, in my family, they didn't know what the hell was going on because I was 365 pounds. I was the fattest crackhead in Westchester, you know. They figured, where's all the money going? They thought I had a gambling problem, you know. I'd do anything to cover my addiction. And if eating food was one of them, so be it. You know, so here I am, this like fat, happy crackhead, you know, going through life and, you know, what I thought was nice. And then I got to back up a second, because when she first very opened the meeting, they talked about the smoking policy and how, you know, if you get caught smoking, they'll give you a $300 fine. And I'm sitting there saying, shit, I paid $300 just to come here and smoke in that bathroom. You know, I used to know every bathroom from Washington Heights to wherever I went, because I stopped in every single one of them. You talk about American Express card and shit, my stem was like my American Express card. I never left home without it, you know. So here I am, you know, and I gotta tell you, you know, from Westchester, born in Scarsdale, you know, this little Jewish kid, you know, and if I had known where my disease would take me, you know. Because somewhere in the middle, see, my father never saw me get clean. See, what happened when he was dying of emphysema, you know, Jewish, we bury the next day, so it was my responsibility to take him off life support. Those were his wishes, but I got news for you. And I said this for the first time at the last speaker jam. If you don't think that the thought of me getting high, because his dying was interrupting that, had something to do with my decision to take him off and pull the plug real quick. You know? And I can say that too. See, when it came time to make funeral arrangements and pick out a casket, I had to park outside the bank so I could rob his checking account and clean out the safe deposit box and go to Washington Heights before I took care of those things. That's where my disease took me. I came in here with a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, and a lot of remorse. A month and a half ago, I buried my sister, my oldest sister. We got clean together. We worked in this field together. And I watched her die of cancer. And I also watched her go out somewhere along the 10 years she had. And that's probably the hardest thing you can do, because you're powerless. All you can do is be there. And I'm not the one that had the cancer, you know. I don't know what she went through, but I was there. You know, and it still hurts. And the night she passed away, I left Calvary Hospital that night, and at 6:45 in the morning, I was at a meeting talking about it. I never stopped doing the things that I did from the day I walked in here. Reach out to another addict. Go to meetings. Do service. You know? Those are the things that work for us. I don't know any other way. You know? My attitude is, and belief is, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know? Real simple. Not broke, don't fix it. If it takes going to a meeting every single day, go. More meetings, more recovery. Less meetings, less recovery. No meetings, no recovery. And nothing hard about this. I didn't have to go to school to figure out how to be a counselor. Shit. I learned the hard way. You know? School just got me a paycheck. That's all. It's not about that, though. You know? So, I got to back up because there were a couple other things that happened along the way that gave me many excuses to use. I had no reasons, just excuses. I also had a sister at the age of 28, raped, strangled, and beaten to death as a direct result of living on the streets in Harlem. Yeah, you talk about jails, institutions, and death, and those were the consequences of her actions, you know? And of course, me being the hero child, you know, to put up the facade that everything's okay at home, I'm going to be the one to go ID her body, because I didn't want my parents to have to go through that. And the reality is, they couldn't ID her until they found an arrest record from her out in Jersey. So here's this body laying in a morgue rotting for 3 months. And they were going to bury her out in Potter's Field, and then we got the phone call. You get visions in here that you wish you never want to see. And as she was talking earlier about all that trauma and all that pain, and that's why we medicate. I just want to forget. I don't want to feel. And yeah, it is short-term pleasure. For me, it lasted about 30 seconds. And then the chase was on. And I never stopped. The only way I ever stopped is if I was locked up in a hospital bed, you know, or in a rehab. You know, and there are many of those. You know, my kids were out of my life. My family was out of my life for a long period of time. And I remember my kids, my mother would bring the kids to me in rehab. They're little babies. And my kids saying, you know, my mother always telling them, Daddy's in school, you know. Daddy was in a lot of schools. Because I remember my daughter coming up to me one day, said, Daddy, you went to a lot of schools. That's why I'm so smart. I'm so smart that I couldn't get clean. I was too smart for my own good. I always had the answer before you even asked the question. You know? I know. I know, and I'm off to get more. That was my answer. You know? And then I came in here, and I'll never forget. Very first time I got arrested, the judge says, you know what, Mark, if you're a good boy, for 6 months these charges will go away. I spent the next 9 years on 2 felony probations. I had a promise that if I got arrested again, I'd do a flat 4 upstate. So I decided to come in and get clean. You know, I really didn't want to do 4 years upstate. You know, I thought I was a little too cute for that. Nice little white boys from Scarsdale don't go upstate for 4 years, right? You know. So, I put together about 11 months. You know. But of course, they tell you about people, places, and things. And one of those people happened to be my older sister. You know. I didn't have a driver's license for years. So I'd come out of a rehab, making meetings, coffee commitment, sponsor, the phone, you know, all the things we're supposed to do, right? And of course, there were suggestions I wasn't willing to take. And those are the ones we always pay for in the long run. You know, then there were no more phone calls to the sponsor. It was, well, back then it was, you left a voicemail on their home machine. It wasn't cell phones then, you know, not really. So I always knew what hours he worked. I'm just checking in. Goodbye. Right? You really don't want to talk to anybody when you're on your way out. You don't really know you're on your way out, but that's how it starts happening, you know, long before you pick up. So, I got to go to the bank one day, and I come out, and there's my sister hitting the stem in the car. Actually, let me back up before that. She was really sick. You know, of course, I wasn't that sick. I knew she had problems. You know. So, it was always about everybody else. And, you know, we're both trying to stay away from each other for a while, and she's telling me how she's going to meetings, and I'm actually going to meetings, you know. And, you know, I want to get up on my little soapbox and preach how you should be clean and sober and how to recover and do all this stuff, and, you know. And the reality was I was already on my way out, and I knew she was using. So I put myself around her as often as I could, and then I came out of the bank that day, and she's hitting the stem in the car. And I said, hand it over. You know? I'm just going to smoke a little crack that day. I'm just going to have one. Now, I've never had one of anything. From that day, I disappeared from my home group for another 3 years. And those were the most miserable 3 years of my using. Yes. Because during the 11 months I had clean, I wasn't wrecking cars. I wasn't going to jail. I wasn't landing in hospital beds. I may not have been putting the principles into my life, but I wasn't suffering consequences either. So, of course, I go back out. I pick up the crackhead of my dreams down in the Heights, and I says to her, "Listen, all you gotta do is clean. Just clean my place up. You know?" She's like, "Yeah, I can clean. I can clean." We come back from the Heights, and for the next 3 years, she didn't clean shit except my wallet and my stems. Anything left? You know? And I had this promise that I'd do another 4 years upstate, still hanging over me. You know? God has a sense of humor. And he has me arrested again. You know? Freak arrest, minding my own business, sitting in the back of a cab out in Jersey. The friggin' cab driver, his registration will expire. Next thing you know, I'm going to jail. So now I'm like kind of screwed. And right before this arrest, I got to tell you, 6 months before this arrest, I dropped my sister off at another rehab. And they weren't going to take her. You know, she'd done about 30 of them. But I said the magic words, "You got to keep her because she's suicidal." I got to tell you, the only reason I wanted to keep her was so I could go back and rob her house. You know, so they kept her. I robbed her house. I went back downtown. You know, but I saw when she came out of that rehab, all of a sudden, for the first time in her life. See, I'm hard-headed. You got to prove to me this works. You know, you can't just tell me. I'm the type that has to see it, to believe it. She had women in her life instead of the usual victims that she was telling me to toss out of her house. She had a home group.
Wow.
She had a female sponsor. She was actually doing service. So after watching 35 years of her addiction, I saw she was actually working this. I was like, "Damn, maybe this will work for me too." So now here I am sitting back in this jail cell, right? And she had 6 months clean. I had $700 in my pocket. And they set bail at $750. Now I gotta call someone. 4:30 in the morning. Actually, I'm pacing back and forth in the cell for quite a while. And they got the camera looking at you to make sure you're not gonna string yourself up. And I got this moment of clarity in the jail cell this time. And I don't know what it was. It was my higher power sending me a message. And it was real simple. It was, "What have you done with your life?" You know? See, I was at a point where no matter how much I did, crack wasn't working for me anymore. I couldn't get high. And I was also at a point in this jail cell saying, "I can't imagine my life with the drink of the drug, and I can't imagine my life without it." That was the stepping off point. Nothing's working. I'm feeling miserable. I can't take this anymore. So I'm hanging on to the little cell bars and they're looking at me, you know, making sad faces like they're going to feel sorry for me, maybe let me out, you know. And thank God they didn't, because if they had let me out, you know where I was going. I'd have been, "Thank you God, another foxhole prayer left, worked, and down I'd go." But instead, they said bail at $750, so who do we call? Mom. Who does Mom call? Sister. Who comes to bail me out? The two of them. 4:30 in the morning. You know. Pouring rain. It was a Tuesday. And the whole time during that 3 years that I was back out on that relapse run, I said, the day I go back to my home group will be the day I get clean. I just couldn't get there, you know? So I get out. They bail me out. I get home. The crackhead of my dreams is still there, stem in hand, waiting for me to come through the door. And I had to make a decision. You got it. I was like, you gotta go. In the pouring rain, threw a shit out on the porch, changed the lock on the door. 6:45 that morning, I was back in a meeting. Because it was a Tuesday, I then go back to my home group, sit up front, right there it would be. I already knew what I had to do, you know. With my tail between my legs, and they say, you know, you got one day back, and they clap and all that stuff, and you know what? That was the last thing I wanted to hear. I was at a point in my life where so low, so empty, that emptiness, you know, you just thoroughly defeated. And I sat there. Now you got to picture this 365 pound crackhead falling asleep. I had sleep apnea. I had all kinds of problems going on physically. You know, I'd sit there. I'd snore like an animal. Everybody be laughing. You know, and they said just do a meeting a day. Well, not me. I was too sick. I knew how sick I was. I had to do 3 to 4 meetings a day. I'd fall asleep in a meeting, I'd fall out of my chair. They'd pick me back up. I'd call my sponsor. He'd come pick me up. We'd be in his car, going around a turn. He'd have to hold me up. I'd be snoring, you know, falling asleep. But I did the basic things. I put the steps into my life. I've made amends to people. I continue to do service. I have my children in my life. I'm able to be there for my family. Not much left, you know, like I said, it's a very small family. I was able to be there to hold my sister's hand when she passed away. I was able to take care of the funeral arrangements without getting high. See, I can feel things today. I don't have to medicate, you know. Tomorrow, when we talk about living life, we'll be skydiving and I'll be taking my daughter for her first jump. Now, how often do you get to tell your kid to take a flying leap and then actually throw her out of an airplane, you know? But that's what I'll be doing tomorrow, you know. This is about living life. The pain is done. It is optional today. I no longer have to live minute by minute being told what to do, who to steal from, who to lie to, and let the stem dictate every minute of my life. That is optional for me today. All right? I choose a day at a time not to pick up, with the help of the God of my understanding, the people that I love that are in my life, to be a parent, to be a son, to give service and give back one day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you.